Howdy, howdy, y'all.
Hey, guys. This is Lee and Deborah Kluwer.
Of My Life, My Story.
Yeah, welcome to our podcast.
In this morning time, this recording, I've got this deep jazzy voice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Grab your loved one and eat a pizza.
So romantic. Well, yeah, guys, thank you so much just for hanging out, for joining us, for listening to just some awesome people that we've met.
Yes.
Along our journey.
Yes, we have. And before we get started, go up there and hit that subscribe button and or follow button or whatever the button is called that lets you know that each week we've got a new one out.
Stay informed.
Yes, and visit our website, Team Libra, TeamLeebra.com.
Yeah, lots of awesome stories out there. Yep. But so today
we have a bartender from the Keys.
Yeah, and that's such a limited, I mean, that does not even remotely yep. describe everything that he's done and I'm been through and adventures.
And just kind of talking.
He just has to talk.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
We're going to rein this in right now. Let's tell him a little bit about Jason Dixon.
Yes. So Jason has been in the hospitality business
for a while.
Much all of his life.
I was going to say, yeah, from early on.
But it's not just hospitality. I mean, he's worked at tourist-based restaurants in Missouri out in, I forgot the name of the area out there. It's kind of...
It's Columbia, University of Missouri.
Yep. So he's got some interesting stories of just saying, you know what? Let's try something new. Jump in his car.
Yeah.
And not drive to a job, but drive to a location...
And then find a job.
Find a job.
Yeah, it just was, it was fun, inspiring. Yes. Like, man, like, way to just grab life by the horns and just try it, you know? Yep. So it's pretty crazy.
So, you know what? The best person to tell his story
is Jason.
Yeah.
All right.
Hello, Jason. Welcome to our show.
Good to be on. Yes.
Welcome to the famous podcast, My Life, My Story.
Yes. Famous, not quite yet, but hopefully someday.
It's famous to me.
Yes, it is.
I've been listening, and it ought to be at some point in time. It's good stuff.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, we're moving along, and we're starting to finally form sentences correctly and use actual proper vocabulary.
I was going to say, Lee would kind of... He would listen to some past ones of us, and he'd say, "I realize I won't finish a sentence." He's like, "I'm so excited to say the next thing." I can't.
My ADHD. I'll be like thoughts. Talking like this right here, and like, just wanting to get the next thing.
I'm like, I mentioned earlier that I'd done. I used to do a radio show, and I used to take notes before the show, you know, and I'd never use them. I'd get excited about whatever I was talking about next, and skip right over everything I wrote down.
Well, we're gonna get into the radio show because you said that, Deborah noted that on her notepad here.
I did.
So I know we're coming back around to that, but we're going to go way back in time, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to play the oldies right here on the radio.
We'll have that music in the background.
I think we're going back all the way to Missouri.
I know we are, which I'm super excited because I have connections to Missouri, and I gave it away that's kind of where we're headed. But and it's funny because I don't know if you get this too. They're like, "Oh, you're from Missouri. Where are you from?" And then they'll say something like, St. Louis or Kansas City or just something, or like Florida. Oh, I'm from Florida. You know, where are you from?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like 13 hours away. Oh, yeah, that's true. Nobody's actually born there, right?
And now, a word from our sponsors.
This Team Libra podcast is brought to you by 828 Vibes.
There are countless opportunities to enjoy nature, nightlife, recurrent festivities, and much more in these beautiful Smoky Mountains of Western North Carolina. With 828 Vibes, we take you on multiple journeys in these Blue Ridge Mountains.
We highlight hiking opportunities through the mountains that take you up to beautiful heights, to the wonder of the seemingly endless waterfalls, and into some of the old forests with trees that have weathered the test of time.
If your journey requires more water-related activities, we can also show you the best kayaking spots, where to find paddleboards, and even fishing.
And let's not forget about lodging and food. Let us be your guide to some of the most unique and tasty local spots, as well as quality places to lodge while you're enjoying our beautiful mountains.
So whether it's hiking into the majestic forests,
walking along the road to nowhere, or kayaking,
or checking out local breweries and events,
Join us as we explore and highlight the mountain towns of North Carolina.
Visit 828vibes.com today.
This Team Libra podcast is brought to you by Journey of Faith and Hope. You don't have to look very far to recognize that this world can be a little crazy, and let's face it, there are a lot of people and things out there that tend to let us down. When there seems to be a lack of hope, where do you turn? My name is Deborah Clore, and I'm with journeyoffaithandhope.com. On my website, we explore daily struggles and how my own relationship with God gives me the hope and tools I found helpful in navigating and bringing meaning to this often uncertain life. You'll find blogs and stories that you can relate to that can bring encouragement as you travel on your own path. You'll also find a list of books that have been extremely helpful in my own walk with God, as well as information on how to enter a meaningful relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Make sure and check out journeyoffaithandhope.com today.
The Team Libra podcast is sponsored by Lee Clore Designs. Small business owners have enough on their plates without having to worry about building and marketing a website. 92% of all searches are made on Google, and 46% of those searches have a local search intent. They are looking for local services just like yours. That's where Lee Clore Designs comes in. I specialize in small business websites, logos, online marketing, and graphics. I'll take care of everything for you so you can focus on running your business. And because I'm based in the mountains of North Carolina and Georgia, I understand the unique challenges small businesses face in the rural areas. My goal is to empower small business owners to succeed online. Contact that website guy at Lee Clore Designs. Visit my website at leeclore.com. And welcome back to the show.
Tell me, go ahead.
Well, it's funny. I grew up in a little town south of St. Louis called Sullivan.
Oh, Sullivan. Okay.
Yep. Born in 73. Dad was a drill instructor at Fort Leonard Wood.
No way.
Mom was from Sullivan.
Okay.
And they lived in Waynesville, just outside of Fort Wood.
Yeah.
And since mom and dad lived in Sullivan, and dad was on duty, she drove back there when she thought it was about time, and I was born in Sullivan.
Huh. That is so cool. So, oh my gosh, like connections are pew.
You're just right.
So I am actually a guardian ad litem here in North Carolina, just working with the courts with foster kiddos and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
And obviously, not too many details, but long story short, a kiddo of mine ended up in Sullivan, Missouri, believe it or not.
No way.
And with my mom living in Phillipsburg, just a little bit west of Lebanon, it was just like, honestly, I feel like it was just a godsend for me to be able to just go and hang out with this kiddo. And things were not great. So I really do believe it was just like divine intervention. But that is too crazy. Yes. Sullivan.
You were hanging out in Sullivan, or that's where the child
was? No, the kid was there with some family. And,
okay,
and
gotcha.
When I was just visiting my mom at that time, and I mapped it out, and I was like, okay, hour and a half, like, we're doing this. Like, this is meant to be. So yeah, that was the first time I'd actually heard of Sullivan. But of course, Fort Leonard Wood, Waynesville. I mean, my mom... Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to, it's not going to become my story, but that was my mom's like beginning of her civil service with the military was at Fort Leonard Wood. Gotcha. Like, I don't even know,
well,
back in the 60s.
It was a fantastic place to grow up.
That's,
you know?
Cool. Yeah.
I think we had a type of freedom, especially being outside of the city, St. Louis, Kansas City, Columbia. We had a type of freedom that even then was rare.
Yeah.
You know, I was really young when, gosh, born in Sullivan, dad ended up getting out of the army not long after. Mm-hmm. And his family were from Southwest Missouri near mm-hmm. Joplin.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up out in New Mexico in, I guess, the 50s.
Yeah.
His dad was a miner.
Wow.
And then they had lived in Sullivan for a little while. We had the big iron mine there, Pea Ridge Mine.
Yeah, okay.
And that's how mom and dad met when they were young and in school.
Yeah.
And then... Grandma and Grandpa took dad and his brothers and sister out to New Mexico.
Okay.
Moved out there to mine uranium, eventually got into the petroleum business.
Wow.
But so dad came back. How did that work? He came back, I think, his junior year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
They came back for a little bit, and he and mom got reacquainted again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got drafted shortly thereafter. They got married, and he went out to Vietnam.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he actually got sent home a little bit early. His brother was killed in a uranium mining accident in New Mexico.
Wow.
And he came back for the funeral. And while he was here, he got orders to report to drill instructor school.
Huh.
And he went off to Norfolk and then got stationed right up the road from home in Fort Wood.
Wow. That's kind of cool. I wonder, did you get a feel that they were like happy that they didn't have to go far? I mean, some people, they want to travel during that time. I don't know if they ever mentioned.
Dad's family was kind of, I don't want to say rootless, or shiftless, but they moved around. Right. Mom's family was pretty stationary. They lived in the area for years. Old German stock, came over in the 1820s or so, and they stuck around where their family was.
Yeah.
Dad's family was spread out all over Tarnation.
Right.
Grandpa worked in Libya for a while, and Dad worked in Saudi Arabia for 14 years.
Wow. So yeah, definitely. You had like two different ends of the spectrum. It's funny you mentioned that German influx because my mom's mom, that's where their family was from, like maybe a generation or two behind there. So yeah, probably a little known fact that area of Missouri had some, just that German influence and stuff.
Very, very German, yeah.
So
I went to school with kids that you go over to their grandparents' house and they didn't speak English at grandma and grandpa's house.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So growing up, you talked about having a lot of freedom. Do you have siblings?
I have a younger sister. She is five years younger than me.
Okay. Now, did you two kind of pal around, or you more kind of hung with your
not
buddies?
Not really. Yeah. We were pretty contentious up until, I don't know, I was 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
But spent a lot of time together. You know, like I said, that's kind of one of the freedom things. I was babysitting my kid sister when I was pretty young. You know?
Right.
Dad worked, he was on 30 off 30. So he'd go over to Saudi Arabia for 30 days, then come home for 30 days.
Wow.
So it was mom taking care of us half the year.
Right.
That was pretty typical with a lot of military families. The dad gets deployed and the mom's back home. Everybody thinks it's just the father serving, but you know, the moms are back here running the house, doing all the bills, troubleshooting everything and raising those kids and
schooling.
You know, dad comes back in from deployment here and there, but, you know, the moms, there's a lot of sacrifice on both sides, being deployed. So it's a lot.
A blessing in a lot of ways, the way it worked out. He wasn't in the military any longer. That was when he was working for the oil company.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so, like I say, he was on 30 off 30. Man, those military guys, they're gone for a year or two before they see
family.
Right,
that's true. 12. Yep. So when you got, what were some of your favorite things growing up, like with that freedom, running around bikes and, I don't know, just...
Motorcycles, oh my goodness. I got my first mini bike when I was like 6. Nice. Riding it around the woods. We had a little 10-acre spot, and about 3/4 of it was wooded with trails through it. So we'd ride motorcycles through the trails. And, you know, I can't remember how old I was when I got my first BB gun, but I was turned loose with that thing way too young. And then I think I got my first shotgun when I was 10, and by 11, I'm hunting, you know, with it.
Sure.
We raised English setters, so I'd go bird hunting after school, you know.
Yeah.
It was... And it just wasn't a second thought. You know, Dad being ex-military, ex-drill instructor, I'd had quite a bit of instruction. I was in pretty safe hands, but you still got an 11-year-old mentality running around with a shotgun.
I grew up that way. So.
Some of that country living.
But, you know, just in that was about the same time my aunt and uncle had the concession at Merrimack State Park.
Oh, really?
They were there 28 years or something like that.
Huh.
So they ran the cabins and the hotel and the restaurant and the camp store and the canoe rental. And that was kind of my growing up. I grew up in that park.
Yeah.
Started when I was like 10 working in the woodlot selling wood on Friday and Saturday nights.
Yeah.
And ended up in the kitchen and washing dishes and cooking 300 breakfast by the time I was 14 on Saturday, Sunday morning because I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
I think it was $3.13 an hour.
Oh my. Of course. Hey, that was.
But it was hilarious because the woodlot gig, the first one I had, was one of the best jobs I've ever had.
Yeah.
I think the wood was like $3 a bundle, and I'd bundle it up for them and stick it in their car.
Right.
And they'd give me a $5 bill and say, keep the change. So I was introduced to tip culture very early.
Oh, there you go.
So I was like 10 years old telling you know, sometimes two or 250 bundles of wood on a Friday night, 150, wow. 200 on a Saturday. I'm making $400 to $500 a weekend as a 10-year-old.
Dang.
It was insane.
Yeah.
It was insane. Best That's job I ever good. Had.
Yeah, for yeah, sure. For sure. Like, we're going to get that. I got to go back before we move on from yes. the Merrimack Cavern. So, yeah, Missouri up I-44, you see ads and stuff. But supposedly that was like a hideout for Jesse James at one point. Uh-huh. I remember going through the tour. I was like, Mom, we got, you know, when you live in a place and sometimes you never see those tourist attractions that you live near.
Yes.
You just take it for granted or whatever the case may be. So one day Mom and I decided to venture out there, but that was kind of a fun random.
I do that all the time down here in the Keys. I live in the Keys. There's all these touristy places yeah. that I haven't visited. I've been here 13 years.
Yeah. Come on. And then you start to move. You're like, dang it. All right, come on. We got to get all these in before I move.
It happens here in the mountains of North Carolina.
You know, you bring up the caves, and yeah. that was one of the super interesting. You know, like I say, my cousin was 3 years older than me.
Okay.
So he kind of led the charge in a lot of stuff that we did. But Missouri is just riddled with caves. It's all limestone. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of springs and fresh water. So there's a lot of caves.
Yeah.
And we would go camping and hiking young, 8, 9, 10 years old.
Hmm.
And just exploring these caves, wild yeah. caves on Farmer John's property, you know, by ourselves.
Well, yeah.
It's insane that we survived.
I know, isn't it? I mean, you think to yourself, you're immortal. Even when you're a teenager, you're doing all this stupid stuff. And now you look back on it and you never want to hear about your kids doing the same crazy things you did. You're like, you're going to die. But you did it. I'm still here, though.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of fearful that your kids will do the same crazy things you did when you were growing up.
Hmm.
But you didn't think about it.
We're looking to move back there at some point in time yeah. soon, just so she can have a bit of that. You know, you don't get the same thing down here.
Yeah. Different, just different
Love
environment.
The Keys, but yeah. it's a grown-up's playground.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, it's funny because Missouri, I mean, it's not like that huge vacation spot unless you're talking about Branson again, which I think is a little bit older-ish folks, but it's so beautiful. I mean, fishing and hunting and like you said, the caves. I took Lee and my stepson Caleb to the Elephant Rock.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
We didn't. We got in the water at the Johnson Shut-ins. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
he jumped off the cliffs there.
Caleb. That's the cliff jumping that yeah. Lee sometimes.
The only
talks
two
about.
Permanent injuries I have come from jumping into rivers.
Oh goodness.
Yep. That's it.
I mean, messed up my back. Messed up my shoulder.
Oh,
only,
no.
I've been blessed and I've been. Not injured very often.
I yeah. did it when I was a kid in the same places he's jumping off here that are high. I'm yeah. like, oh, you don't need to get too high. And I'm thinking, that's where you jump from. And I'm like, I don't want to see my son falling. So.
Yeah, different when you're doing it yourself.
Yes.
And I don't know. I'm pretty adventurous, but in different ways. But yeah, it is very beautiful out there. And I'm proud to have come from there. I got a lot of family there still. And
it's home. It'll always be home. I've lived other places, and the Keys is home in a lot of ways. Columbia, Missouri, I spent a good bit of my adult life there. And that'll always be home in a lot
yeah.
of ways.
But, yeah, that's pretty fun.
So Waynesville, or that, what's the town where Fort Leonard Wood is?
It's not St. Robert, is it? It's
how far
I don't
is that
know
away
what
from
Fort
Lebanon.
It's a good 70 some miles, I think.
We went by there though to get to the shut-ins, right? Waynesville,
yeah,
I remember that.
Waynesville's I-70 bisects Waynesville, or I'm sorry, I-44 bisects Waynesville.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, so you just stay on the I-44 and go through Waynesville.
So I was guess about dad start. He got out of the army when I was one, I believe.
Oh,
one.
Okay.
And, ended up moving to New Mexico where his parents were to go to work on an oil rig there.
Okay.
And was there till about 3. While I was there, he got the job in Saudi Arabia. That's when he started doing the traveling.
Yeah.
And then at that time, you know, when he was going to be gone 6 months out of the year, he bought a house and a little spread, 10 acre spread with a house on it in Sullivan. It's a month.
Gotcha.
Moved there when I was 3 or 4. And then right about that time, he got sick.
Oh, no.
He developed Hodgkin's disease.
No way.
When he was 27, they diagnosed him, gave him 2 years.
Oh. Wow.
And he lived an amazing 14 years after that.
Oh, my goodness.
So he was off work for a while. And then it was a long, convoluted story. The company he worked for was self-insured. They fired him. So they had to pay medical bills. Jeez. And he came back here, got a job in Texas. So we moved down there for about 6 months while things were being sorted out.
Sure.
And eventually, it took almost 2 years. We moved back to Sullivan. He stayed in Texas and would travel back occasionally.
Yeah.
But it took about 2 years to get it sorted out. And what was determined was that they did a bad, bad thing. That it was a King Khalid, I believe it was, of Saudi Arabia. Sent a letter to him saying, hey, one of the pillars of Islam is charity to the sick and the poor. You'll hire this man back. You'll pay him for the time he's gone. You're going to take good care of him and his family, right?
Wow.
And they did. And he spent another, I don't know, 8 or 9 years working for them before he got too sick to work.
Wow. Huh. That's crazy, because that could have been like very hopeless when you think about, oh my gosh, we've got all this stuff and insurance coverage. And
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. What a blessing.
I think you have it all sorted out. And
sure.
Turns out not to be, but we home-based it in Sullivan most of that time, almost all that time.
Yeah.
So did a little bit of traveling. His family still lived out in New Mexico. They were south or west of Albuquerque in Grants, New Mexico. And so we about every year we'd go out there. Sometimes we'd go out twice a year. Always drove. He hated to travel. Oh my gosh, he got all his traveling done for work.
Yeah. So you were were you what, mid-teens when he passed away?
No, I was 19.
Okay. All right. So almost 20. Still, though, I mean, I was 40-some when my dad...
Don't figure my math for my throwing out numbers earlier. No, might not add up. Yeah, I was 19. I moved off to Columbia to go to college.
Okay. So are you a Tiger?
Yeah. And I was a Tiger. I am a Tiger.
That's awesome. I'm a Baylor Bear. Always will be. We were a Big 12 together for a little while.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So tell me, how were you in school? I mean, gosh, drill instructor... Former drill instructor dad. I mean,
it's funny. This is something I was thinking about earlier when I was thinking about the show. And I know it's my life, my story, but I've got to thinking about all the people that made family and teachers. Oh my gosh, teachers. I went to the last good public school that existed, probably.
Okay.
The last what?
Good public school.
Okay.
Public school. People talk about the teacher they had that changed their life. I had 15.
Wow.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. We just lost one of them, Ms. Holmick. She was there for 50 years.
Wow.
Taught first grade for 20 or 30 years, and then switched to third grade. So I actually got her twice. I happened to cycle through them, but just amazing woman. And she really kind of ran that school. She became the principal eventually, and just what an amazing school.
Wow.
But I had like I say, 15 teachers between there. We went to the consolidated high school. So after eighth grade, we went to the big city school with about 160 students.
Big metropolis.
My dog is eating in the background, so you can probably hear
it's
her.
It's driving him nuts.
I'm standing outside, helicopters flying over. Yeah. I live right next to the airport.
Nice.
So all right, constant traffic.
Ambient noise.
I'm listening to you, but all I can see is my dog over there eating the dog food. And I wave at her to go out the door, and she'll go.
She's just staring at him.
I pointed at the door, and she looked up at me and said,
what are you going to do?
And then she went back to eating. So.
What's funny, you talk about teachers. I currently teach middle school. I have taught anywhere from 7th to 12th for the last 18 years. And so little stuff sometimes, I don't even notice it. I mean, you teach middle school, you can't notice every little thing. But he definitely does not have that ADHD gift. He has not practiced that skill yet.
I heard you say I've had 15 teachers that formed my life, and now I've been staring at the dog. So I know it's been good because she's laughed across the counter from me, but I'm like, okay, as soon as she gets done, she's going to go.
He's looking at that squirrel by me.
just such fantastic educators. Most of them were at that school for 20, 30 or more years.
Yeah.
There was one, Mr. Smith, Corbin Smith, amazing man. He's a basketball coach for a while, but he's a history teacher. And I think we were in the sixth grade, and we're talking about the Constitution, and it got a little heated for sixth graders back in the mid-1980s. And he's like, well, it's obvious that something needs to change, but who's going to do it? One of you. And that instilled the desire to get involved in politics at a young age.
Boom.
I wonder if that was a call to action or if he just didn't think the future was valuable enough. He's like, listen, you guys.
Yes, the answer is yes. It was all those things.
All the above.
I would imagine he said that to every class every year.
Right.
In the hopes that some one of them did something.
Yeah, you know? Take up the charge.
But there's not many days that go by when I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm just enjoying life. I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to fix that Constitution.
Wow. That's awesome. I love hearing you say that you had so many positive teachers influencing you.
It was that whole two generations of kids that came out of that area. It's a tiny little school. We had the biggest class they ever had, 32 kids.
Yeah.
Most of them were more like 12 or 14.
Right.
We had five Jasons in my class of 32 kids.
That's like 20%.
That's 70s, man. It was all Brian's and Jason's.
Yeah, the cycle of the names. That's funny.
It's funny. The place I work now is the first place I've ever worked where I've been the only one. Everybody's younger now. Nobody named their kids Jason in the 80s, 90s, and aughts.
Nice.
But this is the first time, and we've got 250 employees.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Just goes to show, huh? So in school, let's see. So you're moving through school. So, sounds like you were pretty motivated, like just kind of staying on track.
Dad was a pilot, and I started flying pretty young.
Okay.
And nice. That was the dream. I was going to be the first kid in my class with a confirmed air-to-air kill. It was Air Force all the way. Mm-hmm. And I was probably 14 when Top Gun came out. Everybody decided they wanted to fly in the Navy. Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah.
I still wanted to fly in the Air Force.
Nice. You're like, nope, I'm on track.
That's the
here.
Thing about it. Things are going
so my grades and stuff. What's that?
That's what most people, they see that movie and they're like, I'm going straight to the Navy. Yep. And I'm going to fly jets. I'm like, well, you got to do that 4 years of college first. Then you need to go through that science part of it. And then apply for flight school. It's not straight in. And the Navy benefited greatly on the recruiting.
Oh, they spent money on that knowing that was going to be a boon to them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the little airport we grew up in, actually, again, some of these teachers, I had a flight instructor that was a World War II pilot.
Wow.
We had a couple guys that flew out of there that were ex-Air Force. One of them was ex-test pilot out of Edwards Air Force Base.
Yeah.
They just sit around and tell stories. He fired the first air-to-air nuclear rocket that was ever fired in the history of mankind. Yeah. And had him fly a weird flight profile to protect him, which was basically turning the belly towards the explosion so he didn't get irradiated.
Oh,
must have worked because he lived in 93, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then we had another guy from Bourbon, next town up. He was a ex-Air Force pilot, flew SR-71s, the fast one.
Oh, yeah.
And he, I think to this day, still holds some world speed records from New York to London.
Dang.
So those were the guys I grew up with, you know. And
sure.
I was going to fly in the Air Force. And so that was kind of the track throughout high school.
Mm-hmm.
Was prepping for that.
Yeah.
You know, and then it turned out I didn't go.
Yeah, so what
I was going to say,
about?
I was waiting for like, okay, all right. And then, you know, what happened next?
What happened with not going to the Air Force?
There was a young lady involved. And she didn't really want me to go off to Colorado Springs for 4 years. So I went to Columbia and went to Mizzou instead.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. That happens.
It does happen. It's I found out recently that I needed glasses as well. I started taking flight instruction. I've been flying with Dad since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
But I started taking flight instruction when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, 15. And part of that is the physical, and part of that's the eye test.
Right.
I took the eye test and oops, had no idea that I couldn't see. I didn't realize you were supposed to be able to see the leaves on the trees.
See clearly. I thought they all looked like that.
Green gloves. So I wouldn't have been able to fly.
Gotcha.
But the Air Force was still a possibility. One of the just strange encounters in this business with people from all across the country.
Oh, I bet.
You know?
Yeah.
When I was at the state park, I guess I was 16 because I drove. All the cabins and dining lodge and all that stuff there were built by the Civilian Conservation Corps back in the Depression.
Yeah.
And the state of Missouri would have been mid-late 80s, spent a bunch of money refurbishing a bunch of that stuff. And so the governor went on a tour, and we took the governor and his staff on jet boat rides up the river to a picnic and back. It just took them about a mile and a half up the river. Well, it was John Ashcroft.
Ah.
And so I got to meet him. And long story short, it was funny that everybody, you know, affiliated with the park, the ranger and the superintendent, and all these people are in boats with us all. There are about five boats. And there were two picnic tables when we set up, and Dad and I were just boat drivers, so we waited for everybody else to go through the buffet line. And the only seat left was next to Governor Ashcroft. So I sat down next to him and actually had a conversation, told him I was wanting to go to the Air Force,
mm-hmm.
informed me that he was able to appoint some people to the Air Force Academy.
Huh.
And we were kind of pursuing that when I just backed out and declined the whole thing.
Yeah. This Team Libra podcast is brought to you by 828 Vibes.
There are countless opportunities to enjoy nature, nightlife, recurrent festivities, and much more in these beautiful Smoky Mountains of Western North Carolina. With 828 Vibes, we take you on multiple journeys in these Blue Ridge Mountains.
We highlight hiking opportunities through the mountains that take you up to beautiful heights, to the wonder of the seemingly endless waterfalls, and into some of the old forests with trees that have weathered the test of time.
If your journey requires more water-related activities, we can also show you the best kayaking spots, where to find paddleboards, and even fishing.
And let's not forget about lodging and food. Let us be your guide to some of the most unique and tasty local spots, as well as quality places to lodge while you're enjoying our beautiful mountains.
So whether it's hiking into the majestic forests,
walking along the road to nowhere, or kayaking,
or checking out local breweries and events,
join us as we explore and highlight the mountain towns of North Carolina.
Visit 828vibes.com today.
I think a lot of it was I could fly. That was the dream.
Yeah, because that's really what you wanted to do.
It would have been cool to fly Dust for 30 years in Air Force, but that's sure. The retirement package is young and decent, but
right.
It went a different route, and the plan was law school.
Okay.
So still had the grades and everything. So I went to Columbia with the intention of studying politics, political science, and pre-law. And the restaurant thing, it just kind of always followed me. I started work when I was 10 in my aunt uncle's place, I said, you know.
Right.
Eventually moved up to the front of the house and discovered you could make tips outside of the woodlot. And that was when I got to Columbia, I think about the first semester I didn't work. And then I got a restaurant job.
Okay.
And that was about the end of schooling. That first semester I was in honors classes, had a 3.7 GPA, I believe it was.
Uh-huh.
Second semester, all honors classes, had about a 2.5, got kicked out of the honors classes. By the third semester, I just quit going to school, big old fat goose egg. But yeah, it was college town, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kid out for the first time.
And, right.
And
spreading your wings.
Yep.
Yeah, I went to work at a Shoney's, just a part-time waiter at a Shoney's. They had a breakfast buffet that ran all night long. So I could do everything else I needed to do school-wise, this was the thought, and then go into work Friday, Saturday night, work 12-hour shift, 5 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Oh,
and
wow.
So you work through dinner, and then you work through the breakfast rush and get things set up for the regular breakfast crowd that comes in.
Yeah.
Well, that crew was like a demented family, and I spent more time partying with them than I did going to school.
Right.
Yeah, it went bad. But I loved Columbia, stuck around there.
Yeah.
Ended up going to work at a big downtown restaurant. This fellow owned five places. He had a big resort at Lake of the Ozarks, and then four other restaurants scattered about Missouri and Columbia and Fulton. And the place of his I went to work for, Boone Tavern, was a big old 700 seat place.
Wow.
Right downtown Columbia, set right next to the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Big courtyard outside, seat about 300 people. And, dining room and lounge, you would do another couple hundred, and then we had a couple banquet rooms downstairs that we could see a couple hundred. Huge place. And again, it's funny, young and dumb and in the business, you didn't know any better than you. It was impossible to serve 700 people with three cooks on the line. We just did it.
Yeah, until somebody tells you can't, you just do what you do.
Interesting how the work ethic's changed with a sense of what people think is possible of themselves has changed so much.
Sure.
I work restaurants, and this isn't anything new. The last 15, 20 years, they'll have six or seven people on the line serving 200 people and just can't.
Just overwhelmed, yeah.
Yep.
Or feeling like they can't. Yeah, you never
know. I ended up working for them off and on for 13 years.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty fantastic education. You know, like I said, I worked for my aunt and uncle for 8 years, and they really taught me a lot about the business.
Sure.
And then working at Boone Tavern for another 13 years, I learned so much. And both of those places spoiled me for working for just about anybody else.
Yeah, I bet. I bet set the bar high. Okay, so I gotta slip in. So Lake of the Ozarks, that was home of Andy's Frozen Custard, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Around there? Oh. You cannot get custard that good anywhere. I'm going to just.
There's a place in Michigan. My wife's from Michigan.
Yeah.
And we went up there at Joe Bob's or something like that. It's, okay. It's just as good. It's just
is it?
But it's you can find it out there, but you have to seek it out.
Okay. All right. I've been to a couple places, but to just she's just very nothing fond like of Andy's.
Andy's. And when we go there, you know, to me it's ice cream. But but I've had some really good one there. Like they have the 4th of July one or some kind of independence one when I was there last time, and it had that kind of granola or obviously graham cracker and marshmallow flavor.
The s'mores.
Yeah, it was a s'mores flavor. Now that was really good.
You're gonna have to stop this. I'm down in the Keys now. We don't have good custard here. No, we don't even have bad custard here.
Oh my goodness. We do have a little food truck just literally a couple miles from our house now. It's the only food truck in our quote unquote food truck park. But anyway, and they do some custard, which is it satisfies the
is it?
Tides me over. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's good. But we always got to make a stop to that, to the Mexican Villa and the Andy's Frozen Custard when we go to Springfield. So staples. Oh man. Okay. So you're in the restaurant business. Now, were you thinking, okay, this is career. Like this is what I want to do.
Oh gosh. No.
Okay.
I tried to escape it so many times.
Okay.
And sold real estate for a while and then couple different sales gigs and some construction type stuff and hated it all.
Gotcha.
I would always, just telephone sales stuff. Mm. Scammy stuff, really, probably. Yeah. It left a bad taste in my mouth almost immediately. And most of those other gigs, I would have to pick up a restaurant job to make ends meet.
Gotcha.
So I'm making my money from the industry. And I was finally probably at about 35 and I'm like, nope, this is a career.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're enjoying it enough, like you have fun with it, the people you're meeting, like you said, even where you're at now in the Keys, I mean, just the people.
I can't tell you
stories.
How many times I've tended bar and you'll have a billionaire industrialist sat next to a plumber at your bar and just the most amazing conversation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
When everybody just sits aside all that stuff and you sit down and have a drink.
Just shares.
Yeah. Everybody's just got the same stories, just people. A little bit different. Same kind of problems, just a little bit different.
No, they're the same problems and they have additional problems because of their wealth a lot of times.
Yes, exactly.
But you know, I've taken care of a good chunk of the Forbes top 10 list. Columbia especially, you know, Stan Kroenke lived there in town with his brother-in-law and the Bushes were always in town, the Anheuser-Busch folk.
Yeah.
And I can't remember his name. Was it Hertz Rent-A-Car based out of St. Louis? He was on the top 10 list, but carried him a few times. Just most down-to-earth people. Got to meet Sam Walton, actually, one time. One of my first jobs, I was working at a gas station in Columbia, just up the street from my house, and just part-time. And they had a breakfast counter, and this guy would come in, and he's kind of a little pickup truck and looked like he'd been working on the farm a little bit. He comes in, come in several times, you know. Finally, somebody's like, you know who that was? And it's Sam, I don't know. Sam Walton, the richest guy in the country.
That is hilarious.
Never would have known. Never.
Founder of
known.
Walmart. Just
Dynasty.
A lot of those folks who start those businesses, because they've got to work to get there.
They had to work.
Yeah. And you don't have that kind of prestigious entitlement kind of. Yeah. So you can't even tell them from just anybody. They've just worked hard and got there. It's usually their second generation and third generation of those, the carry-ons. That's the people who get it kind of given it to them. That's a little bit different. But those ones like Sam Walton, he's just a guy who's busted his can and he looks like everybody else.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So you said about 35, you're like, hey, like, yeah, this is it.
I'll get out of this at some point in time and get a real grown-up job, you know?
Why? Why would we want to do that? Were you still in Columbia about that time?
I started traveling quite a bit. That was one of the things about Boone Tavern. I was there 13 years. It took me about 20 years to do that.
Oh.
Because I would...
Time out. I'll be back.
I would work for them for a year and a half or two and then just go out travel.
Nice.
So I'd go out to Flagstaff, had some friends out there, went out and stayed for several months, stayed in Dallas for a few months.
Nice.
Then I was, I guess, about 97. My plan was to come down to the Keys, and my funds were a little shy to do such a thing, but I still wanted to go to the ocean. So like the closest place that I could find was, so this is, what did I say, 80 or 97?
Yeah.
So I was 30, yeah, about 27 or so. Closest ocean to me, I don't consider the Gulf the ocean, was Virginia Beach.
Okay.
So I roll out of Columbia and head for Virginia Beach with no idea what I was going to do when I got there. And I think I had $78 in my pocket or something like that. But I had enough gas money to get there. The gas was still cheap then.
Boom.
With a few dollars left over, I had a couple rifles in the car and a couple guitars. And my intent was to go hit a pawn shop and borrow some money until I found a job and something to do.
Yeah.
And I've always been pretty lucky that way. And that was my North Carolina experience. I ended up getting up the second morning I was there and went down to the beach, got a cup of coffee and a newspaper, and found a job out on the Outer Banks.
Really?
Yeah. So drove over there. And y'all ever spend any time in the Outer Banks?
Oh, it's on my list.
I was stationed at Cherry Point for a while in the Marine Corps.
Okay.
So I've been
You're a Marine Corps. Yeah.
So yeah, I've done some time at Cherry Point. Now, we never went out, I guess, you know, Emerald Isle and that part of the Outer Banks, but the outer banks, like the farther point of
gotcha.
Let's see.
You got Ocracoke and
where you got all those areas.
Wright Brothers.
Those are a little bit farther out than
okay.
But
I was in Rodanthe.
Okay.
There was a they called it Waterfall Park. It was like had a big water slide and putt-putt and go-karts, probably 12 or 14 different kind of go-karts and some bumper boats and that sort of stuff. Ended up working there about 3 months. And then I was able to go back to Virginia Beach and spend about 6 months there working in a strip club, actually.
Did you now?
It was they were looking for a cook. Neighbor worked there and they were looking for a cook and I was looking for a job and
dinner and a show.
The pay was right. And so I produced some of the finest food that was eaten in a Virginia Beach strip club for about 6 months.
Sweet. Did they ever try to entice you to be part of the entertainment?
No. It was very tame. It's Virginia Beach. So, you know, a lot of the other communities around there were a little more wild, but,
sure.
Virginia Beach was Pat Robertson's town, you know, and he had his thumb on a lot
that's
of
true. There. 700
kept
Club.
It pretty, yep, yep. Kept it pretty, pretty tame in comparison. So,
yeah.
No, it wasn't what I expected. I was, you know, prior to that, I was always a little weirded out going into strip clubs after work, and that was weirded out for going into them for a whole different set of reasons. But no, it was an interesting gig. I got to see a side of you know, the industry that I'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
What's your story from one of those interesting moments?
it's not even anything funny, but it's just these gals that are stripping to you know, make their money, sat down with them and having actual conversations about stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the surprise to me.
Right.
Right.
You think they're all just a bunch of party mongers and,
right.
and
their story and
whatnots. And they're a couple nursing students and that type of thing.
Right.
Just another element of the business that people don't think about unless they do think about it. I don't know.
Right.
But it's, I was actually a very good boy on that trip. I'd been pretty bad up till then. And I was I'm working in this place. If I'm not careful, I'm going to get in trouble.
Mm.
Those Christian roots started haunting me at that time and for the better.
Yeah.
But ended up going back to Columbia after that, worked at Boone Tavern for another 364 days. I wasn't staying a year.
That's hilarious. I got to go.
Keeps calling you back.
Down to the Keys. I've been planning on coming down here for years and years. I've always been a bit of a book junkie. And my mom's best friend was moving. I left a box of books in the basement. I was probably 12, 13 years old. And so, of course, I'm going to dig through your box of books. And one of them I found was a Travis McGee novel. John D. McDonald wrote them.
Hmm.
Are you familiar with those at all? He was probably the first South Florida mystery writer.
Really?
Started writing them back in the 50s. And this book was called Pale Gray for Guilt. He did a whole series of Travis McGee stuff, 18 and 19 of them. They all had a color on the title. Fantastic mysteries. But this one took place in Marathon.
Yeah.
By the time I was done with that book, I'm like, I'm going to live in Marathon one of these days.
Yeah.
This is going to happen.
And it took key.
20 years, but I got down here. 99, I get back to Columbia, work for almost a year. and roll out to the Keys. We had a took two guys with me. Had a one of them, his roommate worked at a bookstore, and the gal that ran the bookstore was dating a fella. This is one of those stories. Dating a fella that owned a campground like the Ozarks. Well, the campground was shut down in the winter, so he would come down to the Keys and run food and beverage service at a big campground down here. And he was looking for help for the 99 season.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So I came down to work 3 months. I was going to do January, February, March, and I'm staying 6 years.
Look how that happens.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not good that way. I have a lot of intention to travel, and I fall into some place, get into a comfortable situation, and there I stay.
Were you working there with him at that food service business the whole time, or just hitting different restaurants?
No, I was there. I was there about 2 years. He actually got fired after I'd been there about a year, and I stayed on for another year. Got another job down here, and that was where I met my wife. I was bartender. She was a hostess. You believe such a thing? Hostess Dan was right next to the bar, so we were always talking to each other.
Yeah.
She was pretty young. She was 18. I was 30. We end up deciding that we like hanging out together, so we end up dating for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty serious about marrying her and having babies.
Mm-hmm.
And she was pretty certain that she needed to go out and do in her 20s what I'd already done in mine.
Yeah.
So we ended up breaking up. This was in 2005.
Okay.
And 2004, late 2004. And by May of 2005, I went back to Missouri. I couldn't take it.
Okay.
Went back to Missouri, went back to work at Bin Tavern.
Yeah. Home and, sweet home.
home sweet home. Gosh, I was back there 12 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Until we got reacquainted again. And she said, I'll come back down to the Keys and see if we still get along. And so I did. And we did get along. Got married shortly thereafter. I'm skipping way ahead. I missed a whole segment. I think it was my 30s.
That's all right. You can back up. You can back up.
Anytime.
But yeah, that was the first time I worked at Boone Tavern. That's where I was at.
Gotcha.
Was there a couple of years, ended up getting a second gig at the Elks Lodge down here, which is another just amazing place to meet people. You ever been into one of the lodges, the Elks or the Moose or anything like that?
I have not.
Me either.
My first step foot into one was the day I got a job at one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole different world. Those folks know each other from forever ago. You got folks, especially in a tourist location like this, you got folks coming in from all over the country, all over the world, that are members back wherever they're from. They come into the lodge.
Arnold Schwarzenegger
was an elk, and they were down here filming True Romance. He hung out in the lodge a lot, shooting pool.
Yeah.
But it's that was another interesting job. I can't convey how cool it is to meet all these people from all walks of life.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's why one of the reasons that I was intrigued by the show is it's kind of what you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just amazing to sit down, you know, next to the beer magnate and the trash pickup guy and listen to him talk for 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's your, you're located in the Keys right now, but some of these stories over there, you've said you've met Arnold Schwarzenegger and a few others. We're name dropping now. So who else can you?
I never met Schwarzenegger. He actually came in right before I started working there.
Okay,
that was one of the things I dug him from. You're going to get to meet all kinds of people.
Yeah.
Just do a lot of musicians. A lot of actors and musicians have homes down here, vacation homes. So they'll come down. They show up at the restaurant just like anybody else.
How do they, are they kind of, people just kind of leave them alone, or they don't recognize them as much? Or
it depends. For the most part, people leave them alone. Gary Burkhoff, Radar for MASH, lived out here in Marathon.
Radar.
and that nobody would leave that poor man alone. For whatever reason, they thought he was approachable, and they would walk past three other stars to go talk to Radar, you know?
Yeah. Because
he had a reputation for being kind of mean, but he really wasn't. I waited on him a few times, and he was a nice enough guy. He just got sick of people interrupting his
trying to catch a break and just some quiet time, and that would be challenging.
I wonder how many times he's had somebody walk up to him and say, Helicopters.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
But it's funny, you know, for the most part, those folks are just like anybody else.
Right.
Yeah, their career just...
A lot of times you wouldn't even recognize them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, for the most part. I'm not a big entertainment guy, so we get actors and actresses and that sort of thing in all the time, and I'm like, I don't know who they are.
Right.
I just... That'd be me. Salt on your margarita?
Yeah, right. <you. laughs> Can I get you another drink?
So you're down in the Keys now.
Yep.
What kind of hobbies and stuff do you have? I mean, you're not in there all the time. I know you've got a family, but I got
an almost 3-year-old. That's been my hobby for the last 3 years.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're my age.
It's a fishing paradise. It is. If you're into fishing at all, it is an amazing spot to be. That's one of the big ones that I've spent a lot of my time for.
Are you a boat fisherman or are you a bridge fisherman?
I sit on the side of the shore and catfish fisherman.
Okay.
I used to make my dad so mad. He was a very avid bass fisherman. We'd go bass fishing in the Merrimack River 4 or 5 times a week, usually. Take the jet boat out and fish for maybe 2, 3, 4 hours before dark and go back home.
This Team Libra podcast is brought to you by Journey of Faith and Hope. You don't have to look very far to recognize that this world can be a little crazy, and let's face it, there are a lot of people and things out there that tend to let us down. When there seems to be a lack of hope, where do you turn? My name is Deborah Clore, and I'm with JourneyOfFaithAndHope.com. On my website, we explore daily struggles and how my own relationship with God gives me the hope and tools I found helpful in navigating and bringing meaning to this often uncertain life. You'll find blogs and stories that you can relate to, that can bring encouragement as you travel on your own path. You'll also find a list of books that have been extremely helpful in my own walk with God, as well as information on how to enter a meaningful relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Make sure and check out JourneyOfFaithAndHope.com today.
And, 30 minutes go by and we haven't caught any fish and I'm changing lures up trying to catch something else. He's like, what are you doing? Trying to catch a bluegill. He's like, we're bass fishing. And I was like, oh, you're a bass fisherman.
Not anymore.
Bluegill you enjoy.
I'm going to catch something.
And that's kind of what I do down here. I just enjoy myself. I use really light tackle and light line. And I lose more big fish than I've ever caught. But, oh, they feel so big when other end of that light tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice
it makes serious fishermen angry.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, sitting on the beach, you see a lot of people, those plastic pipes stuck into the ground and their fishing poles sticking up and you got your chair and you're slinging it out there and you're just kind of watching your line and everything else. And you're just sitting
enjoying
on
the
beach
scenery.
And every now and then you get to jump up and jerk the line and hopefully reel something in. So
I've seen as many big fish caught off the bridges as just about anywhere.
And when you have a boat, it's almost a chore to make sure you get out enough.
The boat,
It's bust out another 1,000. It's an acronym.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. And okay, I feel like I'm having a brain moment here, but we're saying you're down in the Keys. Like, you didn't say Key West, did you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Key
okay.
West
where
is that's about
far south,
45 miles away.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
So I'm in Marathon, which is about halfway down the middle Keys.
Okay. Gotcha. So I lived in Florida as well, South Florida.
Where are you at there?
But yeah, I was lived really more in Fort Lauderdale. But as a teacher, I loved taking the kiddos down to Penny Camp, and then of course had friends that had boats, and they'd always do the lobstering, and you know would always just be gracious and let me run down there. So yeah,
I love it. Fun memories
down there.
It's funny. It's like anywhere else though. You eventually start to take it for granted.
Of course.
You know, all of a sudden it's like, I haven't been on the water in a year and a half. I haven't been to the beach in 6 months.
Right.
Well. It's right there. It's right. Every day.
Listen, we're here in the mountains of North Carolina and Deborah and I do a lot of hiking and kayaking, but for the longest time while my kids were growing up, you just weren't up on the mountains hiking. You just didn't get out and you see them every day, but you just didn't even pay attention to them hardly because you were just caught up in life and you don't do things. And then all of a sudden you're looking around saying, oh my gosh, this is the place where people leave the beach to come here and hang out and do stuff. So we need to get back out there and check this place out again. So you can take it for granted up here, just like you can at the beach, easy enough.
This music's always been such a big part of my life. I've been to like 550 concerts.
Wow.
And I used to be in every, at least once a weekend thing. You know, growing up in Sullivan, they opened up Riverport Amphitheater in St. Louis, about 40 minutes away, drive away from my house.
Right.
When the year I turned 16.
Okay. Oh, so you had a lot of time to.
And you remember that gal that I didn't go to the Air Force Academy with?
Right.
We went to a lot of shows. She was a big music fan. Okay. She kind of turned me on to that whole life.
Wow.
And so went to a lot of shows. And again, that's something else. We get some of the most amazing musicians down in South Florida. I haven't been to a concert in about 2 years.
What's your favorite concert over all these years? If you had to,
some of your favorites.
You know what? You've had so many of them. Let's just say, let's not even restrict it to one. Your top five concerts that you've been to that you would say to yourself, that was my favorite of all of them.
I talk about my top five favorite shows all the time. There's about 27 of them on the list. but you know, it's funny. I was just talking about this at work with sports the other day. One of the best shows I've ever seen is Ringo Starr.
Okay.
Yeah, he does the all-star band thing, so he gets musicians from other bands. I think when I saw him, it was a Riverport show. I think I paid $6 for lawn seats. And that was how we ended up going to so many shows. They were just trying to pack those lawn seats. Joe Walsh and Timothy Schmidt from the Eagles were with him. Burton Cummings from the Guess Who. Dave Edmonds. I don't recall. There were three or four other musicians. So Ringo would come out and do a couple Beatles tunes. And then Joe Walsh would come out and do one of his songs in the Eagles tune. Ringo would come out and do a couple more songs. What a fantastic show.
I imagine so.
And you talk about, and it wasn't just show probably. I mean, there was actual talent to those musicians.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying current folks aren't talented, but I don't know. It just seems like the caliber was different. I sound like an old person now. they don't have talent like our guys do.
even when I was young, I was seeing the guys from, you know, that were 20, 30 years older than me.
Yeah.
That music from that era was just something else.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Man, that's a lot of concerts. I've been to maybe five. You got me beat by a little bit.
Yeah. I've been probably about the same. Just haven't been a concert goer.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I went to, there was a big festival in Tennessee called Bonnaroo.
Okay.
About 100,000 people.
Wow.
I think they had 11 or 12 different stages and ran for 5 days or something like that. It was just constant music going on, all genres.
Yeah.
And went there with my wife before we were married. Uh-huh. First time I was down in the Keys and saw that. That was 04. Well, in 05, when I left the Keys, one of the first guys I hooked up with when I got back in Columbia was a buddy of mine from college. And he's a photographer. He's actually an X-ray tech.
Huh.
And traveled the country doing X-ray work. 6 months here, 6 months there.
Yeah.
And he was a photographer this whole time. His brother is actually a world-renowned watercolorist. Fantastic artist, amazing artist. But Pete, he was just an amazing landscape artist. He shot with a large format camera, these beautiful photographs, large format film, blow them up wall size and not losing a resolution. Amazing.
Wow.
Well, he booked us in to sell his art at Bonnaroo. One of the things they asked for was the artist to do a demonstration of their craft.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't terribly conducive to large-scale landscape photography.
Okay.
So he took his little digital camera and we did eyeball photos. Took a picture of somebody's eyeball. Beautiful macro focus. Had a TV screen behind us. Blew up the iris on the screen. The iris was probably a foot and a half wide. Perfectly in focus.
Wow.
We did 100,000 people there. We did about 13,000 photographs.
Oh my goodness.
Changed the whole feel of the event. People are walking around looking each other in the eye. It was pretty interesting.
Inspirational. Wow.
But everybody wanted to read more into it. And, you know, there's iridology and there's all this allegedly spiritual things.
Gotcha.
And he was medical image guy, so you know, it took a lot of the magic out of it, but it was still really cool.
Let me tell you the science behind all this.
Your lacuna is refracted sideways. But that was a fantastic little dip away from restaurants for me. I think we did that for 6 months.
Huh.
He decided after that we were going to since 05, yeah, instead of going to art shows, which he'd normally done, he did, he'd go to an art show and sell two or three wall-sized prints and pay for the show.
Right.
Money. And we did more selling $10, $20 eyeball portraits than he ever made at the art show.
Yeah.
So we did that summer and went to, I think, 11 different festivals and did eyeball photos. And it was quite an experience. Very intimate. You're standing there 2 foot away from people. And what was funny is I got along to write a story about my buddy Pete, who's a photographer.
Yeah.
And throughout the course of the thing, I became the photographer and he became the storyteller.
So huh.
Wow.
So I would do all these photographs and he does a lot too, but he's talking to the people, generating interest in what we're doing. And it was just such a strange thing. You're standing there foot and a half away from the person you're shooting. And you're doing them one after the other, one after the other. It was some of those folks I'm still in contact with. That was 19 years ago.
Right.
So I remember you talking about being a radio show host.
Oh, yeah. We haven't talked about
where
that.
Where did that squeeze in? Yeah. I feel like literally jack of all trades is what I'm writing down right here.
She's absolutely done, though. I'll make a mean margarita, though. I'll tell you what. I was in Columbia, was working at Boone Tavern. I was probably 22 or 23. And a buddy of mine and I had talked about going to get trained to broadcast on a public radio station. Was it KOPN Colors? And he never showed up, so I went through the training.
Hmm.
And they're like, it could be a long time before anything opens up, a slot opens up. But if anybody's sick or hurt or whatever, we'll get you in. Mm-hmm. And about 3 hours later, they call me like, you want Sunday nights from midnight till 5:30? I'm like, yes. Yes, I do. And then he was supposed to go through the training eventually, never did. I ended up doing it for 5 years.
Huh.
So it was 5.5 hours every Sunday night until 5:30 Monday morning. That was where I really got my musical education.
Mm-hmm.
So it was music format?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Show was called Legends, and I would just do one artist or band all night long, dig as far into their catalog as I could. And being a college town, with a lot of hippy-dippy music folk running around there, I had access to a lot of tapes, bootlegs and that sort of stuff. Hmm. It was a lot of fun.
Wow. Yeah.
Did people kind of start recognizing you and stuff from doing your, you were doing a Sunday night format.
It was midnight till 5:30 in the morning. So the people that did recognize me were, it was an interesting crew. They'd call in at 3:30 and we'd start talking about the songs I'd been playing. They'd start talking about the medications they were on and they were thinking about change. It was pretty wild.
I can't sleep, so I listen to you and I can imagine some of those.
I need somebody to talk to.
Yes.
Well, you were talking about going back and listening to your stuff. I had one guy in town that recorded every show I did 5 years ago.
Huh.
Really? And I was like, I'd like to listen to a couple of those because I'd never taped myself. I didn't think it sounded like. But I'd like to listen to a couple of those. So he gave me a couple tapes and I could not do it. I still haven't. I started both of them and it's like, no.
Never mind. It is funny. You definitely can learn a lot about
your voice doesn't sound like you think it's going to be first of all.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
And then your vocabulary. I guess I do an all right job sitting here talking, but you go back into it and you think, why didn't I just finish what I was saying right there? And then I realize I hear other people do it. Listen, I did this just because I enjoy Joe Rogan and some of these podcast guys. So I've always said I just want to be Joe Rogan of Western North Carolina Mountains, just kind of interviewing people and having fun, going into all kinds of different subjects and stuff like that and getting to know people. And I'm listening. I'm like, Joe's been doing this since 2009. He kind of jumped into it. And that's why he got paid $20 million by Spotify to just be strictly them. Not that that's where we're going towards, but he's a guy who's like really talking every day. He's learned a whole lot since 2009. Sure. But I listen to him and he also sounds just like me. Sometimes I'm like, oh, so it's not just me.
We're not doomed.
I'm okay because he still does it and he's been at it all this time. So I'm all right. I feel confident that I'm doing okay. I'm going to survive.
I was not self-conscious about my voice at all until I listened to that tape.
There you go.
3 years and hadn't even thought about it. Never even occurred to me how I sounded.
Right.
And after listening to that tape, it's like, oh, I got to change the tape.
Dang it.
So we tried to develop a radio voice.
Yeah.
And no, that didn't work either. So I just went back to being me.
Exactly. Yeah. I like it.
Well, it's the same voice. I mean, we do our videos for our hiking and kayaking and everything else. And mm-hmm. It's the same conversation, except for we're kind of trying to at least stay along some kind of subject of where we're at, what town we're visiting. So you're kind of on a script in your head. Where here, it's not really a script. It's just reacting to whatever you say.
Yeah, we sort of bounce off each other. Yeah.
Right. But you know, at the same time, as you're doing two jobs, really. You're interviewing and you're producing. Same time.
Oh,
see. And this is what I was doing as well, because
right.
I was the only person on the radio station at 5:30 in the morning Sunday. So if it was getting done, it was me. So anytime the public service announcements came through or whatever, you had to broadcast that.
Uh-huh.
You were obligated to stick around in the station if the tornado was coming. You know, that sort of thing. It was pretty interesting. You know?
Yeah.
Which did happen one time.
Yeah? Let's hear that.
Yep. It was... Columbia was weird. So the Missouri River runs along I-70 till you get about 10, 12 miles north of Columbia, west of Columbia, and then it juts down south and goes around Columbia and then comes back up to I-70 and runs towards St. Louis. So more often than not, the weather, bad storms coming towards you, and then it follows the river instead of the road and cut around us. And that was what ended up happening that time. We got the tornado warning.
Mm-hmm.
And I played the alarm, and there was nowhere to hunker down in that place. It was the third story of a rickety old building.
Oh, goodness.
But luckily, the storm didn't come. I had my girlfriend at the time. That was the only time she ever went to a show with me.
That ruined her.
Just, I'm never going to come here again. Yeah. Then you can blame it on her, saying, we've never had a tornado where I had to
until
do this.
Until you showed up for the show.
Yes.
Why stirring stuff up?
You turn that stuff back around.
He's like, shouldn't we go somewhere? I was like, I can't.
Yeah, sorry, we're stuck.
Federal crime, sorry.
Hunker down. That's funny. So, I obviously, Missouri roots, I was, you know, vibing with that. And then you're in the Keys now. But we do know that you kind of mentioned wanting to get back to Missouri a little bit. It's that you have a daughter right now, the three-year-old has a daughter?
Yeah, okay. I turned 50 in May, and a week later, my daughter turned 2.
Aww. Yeah.
So I told the story about how my wife and I dated at one point, then 12 years apart.
Then you guys kind of reconnected, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That was 2017, 2018 was when I came back down.
Yeah.
And so I love the Keys. It's just not a great place to raise kids.
Mm-hmm.
True. Kind of a grown-up playground, and at some point in time, she's going to start seeing all that stuff. she's so observant. She's seeing it all already. It's funny. She'll bring things up from before she could talk.
Yeah.
We used to keep our baskets on the top of the china cabinet, and Mom's looking for a basket at one point in time. This has been 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And she hadn't kept them there in a year.
Wow.
Her daughter's like points up to the top of the cabinet. She's like, there's the baskets. Or where's the baskets?
Wow.
It's like she couldn't talk when those baskets were still there.
Exactly.
Sponge it up. But now I kind of spent my childhood, you know, my great grandfather had a big farm. I spent a lot of time working on the farm, living in the country.
Yeah.
You know, I was making that great woodlot money when I was really young, and I spent most of it on ammunition. We had a shooting range behind the house, and I got to shoot every day. And I miss that sort of thing so much. I can't use the excuse that I can't go fishing because this is the fishing mecca.
Right. Yeah. The fishing
part of it too, but there's something about tromping around in the hollers and the creeks around in Missouri. It's a pretty special place.
Yeah. Remind me, where is your wife from?
She's from Michigan.
That's right. Okay.
Yep.
Different in
South
state.
Detroit. And she moved down here with her family. They actually have an interesting story, too. Her great-grandfather was Michigan as well, and he came down here with Henrik Flagler to build the railroad back in the teens.
No way. Flagler, yep. That's a big name down there.
The Keys were kind of on their radar early on, so they all vacationed down here quite a bit. And at one point, her back in, I think it was 98, her dad came home and said, pack big. We're not coming back from the Keys this time.
Bring as much as you can.
Uh-huh.
Wow. So then they've been there.
So they moved down there, down here about a year before I got here.
Yeah.
And she was 12 or 13 at the time.
Yeah.
And they, I think at least 30% of the people that live down here are from Michigan.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
Easily. So it's a rough winter up there.
Yeah. That in New York too. I mean, just a lot of New Yorkers.
Michigan, New York, Ohio.
Yeah.
Good bit of Jersey.
Yeah.
COVID was weird. We had a lot of folks from New Jersey and New York come down during the COVID shutdown, which that was a interesting the way things worked down here. Florida was pretty wide open most of the time.
Yeah.
So we did shut down the Keys for about 2 months.
Okay.
I started working at the resort I'm at now on, I believe it was the 3rd of March, 2020.
Wow.
On the 27th of March, we shut down for 2 months.
Sheesh.
It was funny. I was the brand spanking new baby bartender on staff on the 3rd of March, and I was the longest serving veteran bartender by the 27th of March when we closed. Everybody left. But we were shut down for 2 months. The whole Keys was shut down. It was actually fantastic. Don't tell anybody I said that. But I actually, for 2 solid months, got to enjoy living in the Keys. You know?
Yeah.
Spend so much of your time working just to be here.
Yeah.
That it was pretty cool to just be able to hang out. Pretty newly wed at that point in time. And we were living on about a 3.5-acre property up on Grassy Key.
Wow.
Right on the water.
Yeah.
There were 6 houses on it. And that was a pretty neat time. We opened back up. It was funny that the sheriff's department shut down US-1.
Really?
Right where the US-1 comes into the Keys.
Yeah.
They set up a roadblock and wouldn't let anybody come down.
Gotcha. So they really, literally shut it down.
Shut it down.
Yeah.
And it was kind of interesting. The county asked them to. Sheriff was part of the county, so he did it. And said, hey, that's a state highway. You can't just shut it down.
Right.
The sheriff was pretty much like, I'll pull my boys out of there today if you would like me to. You're going to have about 150-year-old locals show up with masks on to do the job if I don't. So you just keep doing what you're doing, brother.
Yeah.
So we opened back up June 1st. That first week was a little slow. By the second weekend, we were full, and we stayed full for 2 years. There was no off-season for 2 years.
Wow. We everybody getting busy. There. Yeah.
Yeah.
Taking advantage again. Huh. And
so we have all those Jersey and New York folks coming down, and you know, they come in and like, yeah, we couldn't take it anymore. We had to get out of there and have a meal outdoors somewhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They come back the next week and say, yeah, we still not ready to go back. We booked another week, and they come back a little while later and say, yeah, we booked another week. And they come back the next week and be like, we bought a house.
Yeah.
Little boom there.
We had people here because North Carolina was kind of open in a way. I mean, the governor was a little bit more tighter. Florida was definitely better. But in our area, in the mountains and the smaller towns and stuff, it was not shut down because everybody was not as much worried about it. And we had people moving here from Seattle and everywhere, just buying properties and houses sight unseen. They didn't care. They were just buying it.
Yes.
And if they didn't like it when they got here, they were going to knock it down and rebuild something anyway. Yep. But they were just buying houses at crazy prices here.
Yep, same thing happened here. Same thing happened back in Missouri. Those property values.
Mm-hmm.
I've been kind of shopping for a farm around like the Ozarks for a little while now.
Yeah,
and the property is just about 2021, I guess it was doubled, and a lot of them moved, a lot of them didn't. But those folks knew that they can raise the prices.
Yeah,
these people out of the big cities are selling the place they bought 30 years ago.
Right. Oh, geez.
10 times what they gave for it. They can come down here and pay cash.
Exactly. Easy.
Bidding each other up. It was pretty insane.
Yeah.
But what I'm seeing happen now here in the Keys is a lot of those places that people bought, they plan to come down and spend 3 months and then rent it out as a vacation rental.
Yeah.
It's not going quite like they thought it was going to. So now they're starting to hit the market again with a discount.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Team Lieber podcast is sponsored by Leeklore Designs. Small business owners have enough on their plates without having to worry about building and marketing a website. 92% of all searches are made on Google, and 46% of those searches have a local search intent. They're looking for local services just like yours. That's where Leeklore Designs comes in. I specialize in small business websites, logos, online marketing, and graphics. I'll take care of everything for you so you can focus on running your business.
And because I'm based in the mountains of North Carolina and Georgia, I understand the unique challenges small businesses face in the rural areas. My goal is to empower small business owners to succeed online. Contact that website guy at Lee Clore Designs. Visit my website at leeclore.com.
I have heard from our friends who actually introduced
us. Our mutual friends.
That you have had some kind of aspirations or discussions or talks.
Of the political nature.
So we. Yes,
I mentioned Mr. Smith, that history teacher from the
yeah. I remember you mentioned, yeah.
So when I got back from Virginia Beach, when I got back to Columbia from Virginia Beach, that was 1998. I was officially eligible to run to Stanford Congress then, and I ran for the 9th congressional district in Missouri in 1998. Mm-hmm. Didn't do very well. I ran as a writing candidate. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of funny. Kenny Hulsoff ended up winning that year. And his opponent was Rick Hardy, who was a professor at the University of Missouri, American government professor. Been my American government professor. And he actually helped me out with my campaign, even though I was running against him.
He was wild.
An awesome, awesome guy. And so I knew I wasn't going to win.
Yeah,
I was a little bit of a leftist at that time. It's a good thing I didn't win. It's a good thing I didn't publish anything. I've been writing a lot. It was all pretty. I stand differently than I did now on a lot of things. One of the things I'd really like to do when I get back to Missouri is get involved in mm-hmm. in state government.
Yeah.
I was angling to run for governor before I left and came back down to the Keys.
Mm-hmm.
Some things came up and it went bad and I didn't do it. But as I said earlier, I write a lot. And I really am trying to put some of this stuff together and kind of put a platform and outline together.
Right.
And it is my intent to run when I get back to Missouri. There's a lot of foundational things that are pretty broken that nobody wants to talk about. We want to talk about the surface things,
mm-hmm.
the things that have come up in the last 8 years, the things that come up in the last 8 minutes. And there's some pretty foundational constitutional issues that we need to look at as a nation. And in a lot of ways, it has to be led by the states.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a governor that's leaning in that direction to get 37 of the states to work together to change some of these things. There's the big one, or the 17th Amendment. Oh my gosh, you got me started, the 17th Amendment. There were four progressive amendments that passed between like 1912, 1919, or something like that, the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th. And they were all pretty different from anything that's gone on in this country previously. The 17th was the big one.
Yeah.
The 17th Amendment was popular election of senators. Prior to that, the state legislature would appoint senators to represent the state legislature at the federal level. So the Senate was comprised of representatives of the state governments. With the 17th Amendment, we started voting for them popularly.
Right.
And it completely and totally changed our form of fashion.
Gotcha.
Prior to the 17th Amendment, senators didn't run for office. They didn't collect campaign contributions. They were beholden to the state legislature, not the people who paid for the election. And that's when things really shifted.
Huh.
And you won't find many people that want to talk about it.
Right.
So do I think I can win the governorship of Missouri? No. But I think I can help to change the course of the conversation.
Right.
And that would really be the intent.
Yeah.
If elected, I'd serve and I'd try to do my best job possible. Sure. But it would really be about getting the two candidates to consider some of the foundational things that happened 100 years ago, 120 years ago, that we don't even think about anymore. The 16th Amendment was another interesting one. Prior to the 16th Amendment, the Constitution mandated that everyone be taxed equally. It was only with the 16th Amendment that we changed to a progressive taxation system, where you can tax this guy at 3%, this guy at 90%, this guy not at all. Prior to the 16th Amendment, that wasn't constitutional. You tax him at 7%, everybody got taxed at 7%. Tax him at 90%, everybody got taxed at 90%. And I'm not going to die on that hill, but I think that's a big deal too. But the 17th Amendment's huge. the state governments have gone unrepresented completely and totally at the federal level since then. And so many of the problems that we have are a result of that. Just tenant bar over the years, wait tables. I've talked to so many people involved in government. Being in Columbia, we're 30 miles away from Jeff City, not a lot of places to stay in Jeff City. So when you get folks like that that would come in, they'd stay at one of the hotels there, eat at the restaurants there, you know, and I got to talk to a lot of them. And so the senators, and that was one of the things that they agreed on privately, but won't talk about publicly,
right?
Is they're beholden to their campaign contributors, you know, and people want to put limits on it. People want to put term limits on it. And that's not really the answer. The answer is to go back to letting the state legislatures govern as part of the bicameral legislature. You got the representatives of the people on one side. You got the representatives of the states on the other side. Go, let's find a consensus. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that both parts of the legislature are beholden to the campaign donors is where a lot of this contentiousness comes in. Don't need to spend $8 million on your election if you're actually talking about the things that we need to really be looking at.
Right.
Yeah. That's definitely some things that could be talked about and things brought to light. So, man, that's
it's just always
hard to get everybody on the same channel when you have a lot of people not wanting to talk about those certain things. I mean, especially term limits. It's just,
well, it's the curse of democracy. If you go back and read our founding fathers, they were terrified of democracy. Go back and read the Greeks. Democracy destroyed them. You know, and we just keep trying to make it ever more democratic without looking at the history of it. There's a place for it. There's certainly a place for democracy, but the end all be all is, you know, what our founders talked about when they were establishing the Constitution was a composite republic, not just a republic, but a composite republic, a republic comprised of different components that all had their place and function. And we're getting ever further away from that to majority rule.
Well, how do you think as a running for governor, I know we're getting ready to wind up here, but how realistic do you think it's going to be? Well, you're sitting now here with a 3-year-old daughter. You're in the Keys. It's going to be a jump. Your wife and you making the decision to go back to Missouri and find that property.
And it'll take some time in Missouri before I could actually run.
Right.
Residency.
Yeah. But definitely getting some thoughts out there, you know, just people thinking about different things. And
well, and that's what I'm talking about. I think I can put a lot of the right and a lot of the left together talking about foundational principles if we leave some of this other stuff alone, at least at the larger level, at the federal level especially.
Yeah.
Well, the Constitution is really clear about what the federal government has a right to do.
Yeah.
And since the Depression, perhaps even before that, the Fed's really taken a lot of states' responsibilities away from them. Not legislatively necessarily, but executive, which is pretty scary.
Well, here's a question we ask all of our listeners, or normally we ask everyone,
our guests,
is if you had the opportunity to talk and have a cup of coffee with one person, doesn't matter if they're
or a margarita.
Or a margarita, yeah, because you're in the Keys. Let's say margarita.
Don't think margarita drinker. I drink a lot of them.
Who would that person be?
One person living?
Oh, no, living or dead, doesn't
historically,
matter.
Historically, currently.
Yep. Your choice.
Well, I would never turn up with a cup of tea with Christ. Came right down to it. If it's anybody living or dead.
With who? Sorry.
With Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is kind of the standard answer, I suppose, for a certain segment of this.
Yeah.
But that would be unbelievable. That was kind of something that we didn't talk about. I grew up in a Baptist church and kind of fell away from it when I was about 14 or 15.
Okay.
And had some problems with theology, which I thought my limited upbringing, I thought that was Christianity.
Yeah.
It was only when it was quite a bit later that I discovered Lutheranism and kind of a really historic version of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought me back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Living would be a tough one. I'd probably pick some plumber from Omaha.
Get get some life perspective from.
I like. Hey,
it's kind of in a lot of ways. I get to do that 75 times a week.
I was gonna say, yeah.
You don't always have time to sit down and actually explore this person,
right?
But in the slower times you do, and you really get to know them. You know, I get to sit down and have that cup of coffee with executives and plumbers and everything in between. It's pretty fantastic, actually.
I love it. That's pretty cool. It seems like you kind of have a heart of just getting to know people, kind of like the whole inspiration for our podcast. So I don't know. I just appreciate you sharing just your journey, and golly, like seriously, I feel like if you name it, you've kind of dabbled in it or done it.
At least for 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I love that. Just like kind of almost like a gypsy heart in a way. Yeah, and just
pick up and drive with $76 in your pocket.
That's so inspirational.
I just want to see where this car runs out of gas.
Something always comes up.
Especially
if you're in that industry of that restaurant industry, mm-hmm. they're usually always looking for somebody, and you can go right into a place with some experience and go at it.
Walk in, you're going to meet somebody that works there that's going to let you use their shower that night.
Sure.
Within 3 days, you'll have a place to sleep. It's
pretty cool.
Very.
Lots of adventures.
Business in a lot of ways. The restaurant folk really look out for each other.
You're a bartender now, right?
I've been a bartender. I was actually in something else we didn't talk about, but I spent 23 years in restaurant management.
Okay.
Finally got out of that about 4 years ago. My last job I left before I came to this one, I was a supervisor there.
Yeah.
I've done everything from just line supervisor to general manager. And you end up doing everybody's paperwork at the end of the night. Like,
right.
Servers are making four times the money.
Right.
I'm working twice the hours. This is insane. Why am I doing this? And you think you're building towards something eventually that the next great thing is going to come along. And I finally got back into just bartending about 4 years ago now. I'll be at this place 4 years and now. And I love it. I don't miss the management aspect
right.
of it at all.
What's your favorite
I clock out and I don't think about...
Get to be done. People. Yeah.
Whatever pays the rent. Your people do the make your favorite thing for me. I was like, I'm going to make you the most expensive thing on the menu. I liked being set up for whatever. It's all about preparation. You know, part of that's growing up in the kitchen. You had your setup there that you could produce anything off the menu without having to step away from the position. Mm. And bartending's the same. You have a lot of bartenders that hate to make mojitos, a lot of bartenders that hate to make anything in a blender, a lot of bartenders that I won't make an old fashioned. We don't even have a muddler. Oh, and I absolutely love that stuff. I love that. Well, a lot of the early bartenders were from Missouri. They were working the riverboats up and down the Mississippi, and that's where a lot of those drinks were crafted. A lot of
interesting.
Those recipes came from Ohio, Missouri, Illinois, a lot of Louisiana bartenders. But in the history of it's always fascinated. And if you go back, the old fashioned, for instance, you know, that drink's been around since like 1846.
Yeah.
And so you go into a bar and order an old fashioned, and you're going to get one of several different things. A lot of times you get a bartender who their old fashioned is the only old fashioned. You can't make it any other way. And I just start asking questions. Make the guests what they want. Last menu I wrote before I left Missouri, I had five old fashions on it. Like I said, the drink's been around since 1846. There's
traditional
variations. There's timeline variation.
The evolution.
And I like being able to do that stuff. So, not a favorite cocktail individually, but I love, especially when I'm a little bit slow, we will explain to the guests the history of some of this stuff, where it comes from, how it came to be. But for some reason, I love making mojitos. People seem to like them.
Yeah, nice.
And it's such an easy setup. If you have everything right there in front of you,
you can
make a mojito in about 20 seconds. You can't just scramble around finding this, that, and the other. It's going to take you 3-4 minutes to make a mojito, and that's my bartender table.
Right. This is just a preparation.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like anything else. Cool. Well, we wish you the best of luck. And man, we'll have to stay in touch. I'll see about those Missouri roots and all that. Or if we make it down to the Keys, for sure.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Have you make there us you maybe go. Not so expensive of a drink. We'll be more specific. But thank you so much for hanging out. And
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, sharing enjoy that little one. And your beautiful wife and all that. So thank you so much.
Remember when I said in the beginning that I was taking notes and the same thing I used to do when I was on the radio show. And I'd never even looked at my notepad. I think I missed everything I had on them.
I know. I did, well, just some of the connections were so fun just with Missouri and stuff. I'm like, oh, I got to mention. So I'm like, yeah. Okay, don't make it my story. It's his story.
Yeah, I knew it'd be easy for you in the beginning. So I was like, step back out of the way.
It was
so
fun. Well, I enjoy getting to know you a little
bit.
I
can't believe you're from Lebanon. That's crazy. I actually took my check ride for my pilot's license at Dishy, which is the airport to Lebanon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say what's funny is I have I had three uncles from that particular area. My dad's from Ava, Missouri, so that's a little bit further. Okay. But and they would literally build airplanes, like build them, and then on the farm, because my grandparents had like 180 acres or whatever, and they would clear out that land. And my cousin the other day, we interviewed her and she was talking about she would be the ones to try to get the cows out of the way so that they could come and land,
yeah,
you know, on the farm. Sure. On the farm. So, yeah, just fun. You talk about those fun stories and stuff. And yeah. Yeah.
Those were the guys that were fun to fly with. You know, we had a lot of them. They took chances, but they taught you a lot too. I'm about to go back into aviation.
Man. All right. Well, we will let you go. Get back to your family. But again, it was so nice to meet you and learn about you a little bit more.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight.
All right. We're going to let you go.